The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walzer, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Hey, everyone. I'm Danielle D'Souza Gill. I will be hosting Dinesh's podcast while he is away on vacation this week for his anniversary. If you're a regular Dinesh D'Souza listener, then you've probably heard me on here before since I'm the only person who substitutes for him. I host a show regularly on Epic Times called Counterculture, and I absolutely love doing that, but it's always a special treat for me when I get to come and join you guys on this podcast as well. So the best way that you can find me and more about me is to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, True Social, Twitter, all the places. I'm at Danielle D'Souza Gill, and that's where you can find my content, videos, thoughts, everything. But we have a lot of content to get to today. Today we're going to be talking about reports of Trump potentially being arrested. This is unprecedented. We're also going to talk about none other than Joe Biden and his corruption, his failures, and then I will let you decide who should really be arrested. We're then going to speak with the actor Dean Cain, famous for playing Clark Kent, also known as Superman. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
Needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell and MyPillow are launching My Mattress Topper 2.0. Their new 3-inch MyPillow mattress topper is made up of three unique layers. The first layer is MyPillow patented foam, which provides superior support and durability. The second layer is transitional foam, which provides optimal comfort, evenly distributes body weight, and helps relieve pressure points. The third layer is a cover made from a special material to keep your body temperature regulated throughout the night. This MyPillow mattress topper is washable and dryable. It's made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. This incredible 3-inch mattress topper is as low as $219.59 with promo code Dinesh. So call 1-800-876-0227. Again, that number is 1-800-876-0227 or just go to MyPillow.com. But either way, don't forget to use the promo code D-I-N-E-S-H. Dinesh. Markets go up and come down. Smart investors take advantage of the upside of the market while protecting themselves against the downside. We're in a rocky economy with banks going under, stocks sliding, and Biden at the helm. This is a time to be cautious, not reckless. Dinesh and Debbie have a portion of their savings in gold and precious metals because they are the smart hedge against inflation and market downturns. They trust Birch Gold because they have top-notch people to advise them. And they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. If you text Dinesh to 989898, you'll get a free information kit on gold. And then you should talk to Birch Gold about getting started. They offer a free safe to store your physical gold and silver based on qualifying purchases. And they'll also show you how to hold real gold and silver in a tax-sheltered retirement account. With Birch Gold, Dinesh sleeps better at night, knowing he's hedged against market volatility. So text Dinesh to 989898 for your free info kit on gold and to claim eligibility for your free home safe by March 31st on qualifying purchases. Again, text Dinesh to 989898. In the beginning of February, Joe Biden spoke before the assembled representatives of our government regarding the current state of our union. The speech bears many similarities to the State of the Union Biden gave last year. And not in just topics, but also in the unending stream of lies our White House resident insists on peppering us with his every utterance. According to Biden, the deficit has been reduced, inflation is down, and jobs are growing at record rates. If this was even remotely true, Americans would be having a collective sigh of relief. Most people are grappling with these major problems on a daily basis. Biden also believes that granting citizenship to illegals will somehow solve the border crisis, that pro-life beliefs and laws are extremist, that it was COVID and not defund the police that is causing nationwide crime waves, and that the protesters martyred by police at the U.S. Capitol represented the greatest threat to democracy since the Civil War. This second series of claims occupy that characteristically Biden-esque sweet spot between utter stupidity and self-serving political fable. He's either really that dumb or he thinks his audience is. Either way, the press is letting him get away with it by refusing to call him out on his failures. Biden and his media lackeys would have you believe that everything right now is absolutely fine. He's desperately hoping you'll forget when things were much better than they are now and accept the current state of affairs as the new normal. Yet, if you look at how the Biden administration is being run, a number of disturbing details leap out at you. One is that no one in Biden's cabinet seems to have any idea what they're supposed to be doing. As a result, they are failing spectacularly. Yet despite this, no one is being held accountable, which guarantees the massive failures will only continue. Biden desperately wants you to focus on the fact that Trump may be arrested and ignore all the other chaos going on in our country right now. He doesn't want you to think about banks collapsing, the U.S. financial system is in trouble. As Rogan O'Hanley currently wrote on Twitter, quote, banks currently hold over $600 billion in unrealized assets. If everyone tries to pull money out, it collapses. Biden doesn't want you to think about ESG. He doesn't want you to think about upcoming local elections. I'm as outraged as you are about a Trump arrest, and we're going to talk more about that on this show today. And we also talked about that yesterday, but we need to realize that Biden's failures are not just failures. They are deliberate acts of sabotage. This applies to a Trump arrest as well. If Trump is arrested by corrupt leftists in New York, that's not an accident. That's not a blunder. That's an act of sabotage. The same is true of most everything else on Biden's record. Look at the disastrous and bloody Afghanistan pullout. That was a debacle so utterly botched that it will likely negatively impact our diplomatic and war-fighting abilities for generations. Yet no one was held accountable there. And because the incompetent people were not removed, the same Pentagon was caught flat-footed trying to respond to a Chinese spy balloon. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg was caught twiddling his thumbs over multiple supply chain crises affecting food supplies for babies and adults alike, as well as a suspected hack of our air traffic control systems. Not one to rest on his laurels, he can now claim a giant mushroom cloud of toxic and carcinogenic gas as a recent accomplishment. What could better represent his tenure than a literal toxic flaming train wreck? The talentless political hacks and diversity hires in the DOJ, Homeland Security, intelligence agencies, Department of Education, and State Department have been caught repeatedly engaging in state-directed censorship, political and religious targeting, and developing legal theories to establish thought crime. And each time they get caught, the media ignores the disaster. And these same anti-American plants go right back to work, undermining the essential pillars of American government. At the top of the totem pole is the grinning Joseph R. Biden. Just because his fellow travelers and the DOJ refuse to hold him to account doesn't negate the established fact that Biden has direct ties to the communist government of the People's Republic of China. You only need to examine Biden's 2 years so far to see that it's not a stretch to claim his allegiance to America is dubious. Ask yourself if Biden is doing anything different than the PRC would do for themselves. In other words, Biden puts China's interests first. And more accurately, Biden puts himself first, if that's what makes him and his family rich. Shockingly, I know, to see that a Democrat is very likely guilty of serious crimes, crimes that put all of us at risk, yet it's Trump who may be arrested. And for what? For paying hush money to Stormy Daniels? The left gives up their credibility with this witch hunt of Trump and in exchange get to arrest Trump, but for what purpose? This same type of compromise is what killed journalism. The left decided to throw away any shred of investigative journalism, instead to work in tandem with Obama and Biden in order to push their agenda. Meanwhile, those same media watchmen are nowhere to be found when the evidence against Biden is both copious and undeniable. These years of failure feel all the more deliberate when you realize that every move Biden makes improves nothing and degrades everything. His vax mandates have sickened our nation's pilots and decimated the ranks of our military. His constant focus on divisive lies about race and gender have torn away the fabric of our society, pitting parent against teacher and civilian against police. His concerns over green energy are killing American energy, along with the whales. Had he done nothing since his installation, our country would be far better off than it is today. It's pretty damning when an inanimate paperweight gets better results. And the smoking crater that was once America is what Biden and his fellow CCP cronies want you to believe is somehow normal. It's not normal. It's normalization. Some of you might recognize what I'm referencing when I use that word. Years ago, a Soviet defector started making the rounds on the internet. It was so popular that it was even spliced into an advertisement for a video game. The defector's name is Yuri Bezmenov. The word normalization in this speech refers to the final stage of psychological warfare needed to complete a communist takeover of America. Briefly, the first step is demoralization, a process he claims was more or less complete by the time of his speech in 1985. Demoralization refers to the elimination of the moral fabric of society. Step two, destabilization, which refers to a reconfiguration of the status quo to allow the government intrusive access into all areas of our lives. The third step is crisis, where the government takes control of everything in response to a perceived crisis. The final step, normalization, is where the tanks roll in and people accept and assimilate to the new communist regime. You may think that final move is still far off, so let's do a little thought experiment. Let's imagine that tomorrow morning, Russian or Chinese tanks, or both, come into Washington, D.C. They announce the government of the United States has been scrapped and that we are now under their control. Now, don't ask yourself how you would feel in that scenario. Ask yourself how your neighbor would feel. Would they be repulsed, indifferent, maybe even relieved? What if this new regime came with promises? Promises that food, energy, and other essentials would be plentiful and cheap once more, and that the supply chains delivering them would operate efficiently and safely. Promises that every useless diversity hire would be drummed out of government and replaced with qualified technocrats dedicated to competent rule. You have to give up your freedom and in return get safety. Suddenly, that deal doesn't look so bad to your neighbor. Even if it means adding a red flag with a yellow star to our new American flag. You can bet a lot of people would be on board with this new regime. More than would have been interested in this idea even just a year or two ago. If the left gets their way, certainly less than that will be interested a year from now. That's how processes work. Slowly, but always in one direction. Thanks to the brainwashing by the media and educators, along with open borders, our country has no shortage of people among all demographics who despise America and everything she stands for. These people have been on board with our new rulers before they were even presented with this hypothetical choice. That's clearly a considerable portion of our country. You have to wonder who's left that wouldn't buy in to the normalization bargain. Is it 50%? 30%? How small does the number have to be before the tanks start rolling in? So the next time Biden or someone from this regime brags about how they successfully managed America from the brink of collapse and brought us a newfound sense of normal, remember the real normal he's talking about. That's why we need to remain alert, educated, aware, and constantly active in our local communities so that we can prevent this tyranny. Dinesh and Debbie gained weight, not telling you how much, just too much, during COVID and decided it was time to drop some pounds. They started the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition program 6 weeks ago. Debbie has already lost more than 8 pounds and Dinesh is down 16. The program is based on science and nutrition. No injections, no pills, no hours in the gym, no severe calorie restriction, just good, sound, scientifically proven nutrition. It's so simple. They make it easy by providing 80% of your food at no additional cost. They tell you when and what to eat. And guess what? You can do this without ever being hungry. The founder, Dr. Ashley Lucas, has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition and is a registered dietitian. She helps people lose weight and get healthy. And most important, maintain that weight loss for life. If you're ready to lose that excess weight for the last time, call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition at 864-644-1900 or find them online at myphdweightloss.com. That number again is 864-644-1900. I am delighted to welcome our guest today, Dean Cain. Dean is a father, filmmaker, and actor. He played Clark Kent, also known as Superman, in the TV series Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. He was also the host of Ripley's Believe It or Not and appeared on the sports drama series Hit the Floor. Dean, thanks for joining us.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me. Even though you went to Dartmouth.
Oh, yes, we're rivals, huh?
Yes, we are rivals, but actually Dartmouth for us as a football player, back in my day, we kind of pummeled you guys. Really good. So we bang heads a lot.
Oh my gosh. Well, so for the audience, so Dean went to Princeton and I went to Dartmouth. So that's why the rivalry. And I did visit Princeton actually when I was applying to colleges, and Princeton was actually like my initial first favorite thought in my head because I was from San Diego, so in my mind, I thought, oh, it's like the most southern of the Ivy League schools. Maybe I won't be as cold. Obviously, it's all the Northeast, so it's really all quite cold. And then, of course, I ended up at the most Northeast of those options, the coldest one near Canada. But, you know, of course. But
we make lots of jokes about you guys up in Dartmouth.
Oh, like what?
I can't say on air.
Oh, okay. We'll keep that to the college dorm rooms. So, Dean, your life has been so fascinating. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about just kind of your journey before we talk about more of the news stuff. I saw that you spent some of your childhood in Michigan and then in California. And in high school, when you were in Santa Monica, you were excelling in sports and you even played some baseball with Charlie Sheen and Rob Lowe. Is that correct? And like, what was that like?
It's mostly correct. I was born in Michigan, but I moved to California when I was three. My mom up and took off with her two kids. Her first husband was my biological father was not an ideal husband, was philandering. And so she left and came out to LA, to be an actress with two kids, two little Asian kids. And we looked more, you know, my given name is Tanaka. So, she came out here with us too and, met and fell in love with my dad, who she married a year later. Through a really terrible story, actually, a woman was raped and I believe killed in an apartment next to us or right near us. And then the next day, myself and a couple other guys, my brother and another couple kids were out playing cops and robbers as we used to back in the day. And I was the youngest, and so I wasn't able to have I didn't get a toy gun. So I went looking for something, and I found a real gun. And it was apparently the weapon that was used. And that day, my dad borrowed, $10,000-$12,000 from his parents in South Dakota and moved us to a trailer park in Malibu. And I grew up in a trailer park in Malibu, which sounds, you know, like a trailer park, you know, yeah, but it was in Malibu. So we'd spend our days outside all day long on the beach running around. And I grew up with kids like Sean Penn, Chris Penn, Rob Lowe, Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez. All those kids we were all just part of this one little Malibu group. I guess all our parents were involved in the business, not all of them, but in some way or another. And so, through this weird happenstance, those kids all ended up being actors. Now I played baseball with Charlie for a long time. Rob was never the great athlete. Rob, even back in elementary school, was just, all the girls loved him. He's so pretty. And, he loved the girls back. So it was, that was the skinny on Rob, so to speak. Charlie, very good baseball player. Played on teams with him forever. And then went to high school, Santa Monica High School. And I was a good athlete, good student. It worked out real well for me. A lot of the kids from Malibu, when they got to Santa Monica, weren't able to compete at that level, unfortunately. So a lot of the kids stopped playing sports. Charlie continued to play for a while. I don't even know what he did his senior, if he played his senior year or not. And then I was lucky enough to, with my grades and things, get to Princeton University. Had a wonderful career at Princeton. Grew up a lot, turned into a, you know, went from a boy to a man there and played very well. I played football, ran track, and I played volleyball. And then I got a chance to play for the Buffalo Bills afterward, which was great, and got hurt right away. And then it's been acting and directing and filmmaking ever since.
Wow. And so when you saw these actors when they were young, were they similar to how they are now? Is it kind of how you would expect them to be now? Or was it like, oh, you know, everyone was just kids and no one really knew like acting yet and everyone was kind of just a normal kid and I don't know. Or was it like, oh, I could totally see this person becoming this one day?
Well, it was really the latter. Everybody was just a kid. And then I remember hearing, and Sean Penn was a great surfer. And a bit of a rabble rouser. So Sean would be he's a bit of a contrarian. Sean, you know, had some brawls and things like that. And Sean was a tough guy. He was many years older than me. So, but a great surfer. And that's really where he had his cachet. Was like Sean Penn. Oh yeah, superstar surfer. And a bit of a rabble rouser. And then when I heard Sean's going to be an actor, I was like, what? Because his parents and my parents were best friends. So I was like, Sean's going to be an actor. What a weird thing. Even though our parents were all in the business, I never thought of a career because I was a dumb kid. And it didn't make any sense. My dad wasn't directing a bunch of films at the time. He was just sort of finding his feet and his way. And then Sean goes and does Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which basically Jeff Spicoli is a character that is like all half the kids we grew up with. So I was just like, wow, he's just playing all these guys that we already know. It was great fun. And then I watched, then I took off and went to college and did my thing. And I watched the other kids blow up. You know, Charlie and Emilio were in Young Guns. My dad directed Young Guns between my junior and senior year college. So I was off being an athlete and enjoying it and having a great time. And then I watched these guys become famous and make a lot of big mistakes. You know, next thing you know is your buddy, you know, Charlie's on the cover of People magazine as the sexiest man alive, which to me is hysterical. Just like if I was the sexiest man alive, Charlie would have laughed his butt off. You know what I mean? It's like you're just kids running around. That's not – you'd never expect that. But to watch them all achieve that level of fame and notoriety was interesting. And then also to watch them make their mistakes before I had a chance to get out there and make similar mistakes, I was able to learn from that and avoid some of those similar instances. Not that I might have done it anyway, but it certainly was clear, don't do this. Don't sing at the Oscars. I can't sing.
Goodness. Yeah. Well, you've definitely done things really well. So when you were in college, you were still really into sports. You were an athlete. You mentioned even after college how you played for the Buffalo Bills. How did you get connected with Brooke Shields in college? How did you like ask her out? I heard you guys dated. So did you kind of like see her and think, you know what? I think I'm going to like go chat with her. Or did you kind of already know like you're both have the Hollywood or LA connection?
No, I don't think that was part of it. I mean, knowing that world, it wasn't something that was unfamiliar to me. But she was a year ahead of me, and we ended up having a class together my sophomore year, Religion 211. Malcolm Diamond, the professor. I remember I just was waiting for class. Sometimes wait for a class to get out. So you go into your class, and we were in this big hallway, staircase kind of going up, and I looked up and she looked down at me at the same time I looked at her, and we kind of just saw each other and smiled. That was it. And then we just started chatting here and there, and there's a lot of baggage that would go with dating someone that famous. And even though Princeton, a lot of the kids were like, oh, we're so cool, we're gonna pretend like we don't care that she is who she is, who cares, you know. And then there was a lot of that stuff kind of going on, but I didn't think twice. I was an athlete and just doing my thing. And then we sort of met. And after we dated a little my sophomore year, I literally said, there's no way I'm going to ever date this woman. It's just too much stuff. What a pain in the tail. No possible way. And then of course my junior year and senior year, I'm still dating her. But how that happens, things changed.
Things change. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, so I saw that.
So that's how it developed. Really a normal boy meets girl, girl meets boy in the hallway outside of class.
Yeah. Did you, I guess two questions. Did you ever think, oh, later, because you then became an actor after, Did you ever think, oh, maybe we'll do a movie together? Number one. And then number two, I saw that she mentioned you recently, saying she kind of owed you an apology because you were such a nice guy. Did you have any kind of reaction to that?
Well, not, look, she was one of my great loves of my life. So do I have any reaction? I mean, all I say is she's a sweet, wonderful woman. She's grown into a wonderful woman. She was a girl. We were young, very young back then. Complicated life, a lot of things going on, especially with her. It was wonderful. I mean, the things she talks about are real for her, the struggles she went through and with her mom and being, you know, the world's most famous virgin and all these sort of things. It's a lot of weight on an individual. But we always laughed a lot and we always had a lot of fun. And we had great romance. She's lovely. For her to look back at it now, you know, that's very sweet. We've had numerous conversations. There's not much she's going to say that is going to surprise me, and she chooses what to say in public, and that's absolutely fine with me.
Yeah. So when you transitioned from football player to acting, I know you
transition's
had an injury.
A big word these days. Be careful.
Sorry.
Transition's a big word these days.
Oh my gosh. I know this may get censored now on YouTube. But when you, let's say, became an actor after being an athlete because of your injury, did you feel like, oh, you know, my dream was to really be an athlete, and you felt really bummed that because you were with the NFL, which is such a huge accomplishment, you were always, you know, great in sports. So did you feel like, oh, my dream is crushed? Or did you feel like, oh, you know what, actually, I want to be an actor anyways, and so this is definitely something that I want to pursue?
Well, the truth is, I didn't think I was done. I thought I was injured. I was going to have surgery, rehab it, and then have time to come back. I knew that they were going to release me once I had my surgery. I mean, I said Bill Polian was our general manager. And he told me, look, what we're going to do is you have your surgery, and when you're healthy, you know, because it was camp, they pay you a certain number at camp and they pay you differently during the season. So if you make the team, it's a lot more money. And when you don't, when you're in camp, you don't make any money. I was a college kid. Any money was great. And I was a free agent, so I wasn't making anything to write home about. But it was great for me. I was so happy to be there. I figured, okay, Bill Polian said, look, we're going to waive you. If somebody doesn't pick you up, we'll bring you back next year and we'll give it a shot. My hope was that I could have stayed on and just learned the defense and stuff like that. That's what I wanted to do. But it's a business. I still contend that would have been the best thing Buffalo could have done, because I think I would have been a very valuable part of the team. I just love the way they played defense. I fit right in to their scheme and everything. All my strength really fit. I felt more comfortable at Buffalo and the things that they were doing. I wasn't quite there yet, but I knew this is right for me. This is the way I like to play football. This is the way things should be. Even the workouts, the things we did, you know, having your legs be much more fresh. Our coach, my coach, Steve Verbit, hello Verbs, used to run us so hard that our legs were always dead. All the time, it was dead. It was tired. My legs were tired. I mean, I didn't remember feeling like in high school I could fly, like on game day. I was like, oh, my legs feel so good. I just want to run. On college, I was like, man, I'm still tired. Legs are still tired. And that's unfortunate. Sorry, Verbs. but I didn't believe it was over. So I thought, okay, I'll just go back and get strong. And I got really strong in between, but the knee never really got better. And so I had to meet with they released me in November off of injured reserve, which is a violation. I ended up suing them, having a player's grievance, an injury grievance. I won that. You know, the money they were talking about was just pennies. But they saved all the playoff money that they would have had to pay me. And we went to the AFC Championship. So I would have made more money in playoff bonuses than I would have made on my salary. They saved money. It was a good business decision, I guess. But it was a bummer for me. And then, I mean, I was probably in year three of Lois and Clark. So I was probably 28, 29 years old before I realized that I wasn't going to go back to the NFL. Just because you always feel like you could. I was like, man, I can still do it. I can still do it. I went back there and watched some of the games, and I got to be an honorary captain and go out there for the coin flip and stuff with Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and Bruce Smith and all these superstar Hall of Fame guys, Andre Reed, unbelievable guys, our coach, Marv Levy, Ralph Wilson, our owner. It was just so cool to be there and go out there. And then I remember Andre Reed caught a pass on the little right in front of me. I was on the sideline and just got crushed. He turned it up, got just smacked, and it hurt. He didn't show it her, but he stood up next to me. He was just kind of bent there for a second, and he just goes, "Hey, man, how do you get into that acting thing anyway?" I was like, "Yeah, that hurts. That hurts, and they're doing it all day, every day for years." So for me, it was I just didn't realize it until late. Sometimes it pays to be a little stupid.
Oh my gosh, no. I mean, here you are playing Superman in this really awesome role, but you're still kind of thinking about football. Do you remember when you got the role of Superman? Did someone call you, like an agent or someone, and say, "Hey, like you got this, role," because you had done acting, but this was like a very big role for you.
Oh yeah. I mean, I had done a lot of guest starring roles and things, and I sort of knew this was my time because I had a whole bunch of series that were trying to lock me down. I was like, wow, this is incredible. But I hadn't gotten one. So you get to that point, you're right there. You're right outside the door. The door's open, or is it open? I don't know. And then it's one of those things that you can't explain. Like you can't, unless you, it's like you tell a kid fire is hot. Okay, fire's hot. Until they stick their hand in the fire or feel the heat, you just don't know. And so I remember I was at my buddy's office, who was a young filmmaker, and he had this office that he inherited from his family. And great friend of mine, my roommate actually at the time too. And he was always my lowest lane. Like I had to run lines with him and he hated it, but he did it for me. His name is Winter, great guy. And I was in his office and I got the call from my agent and they're like, after I did all the auditions, all the things went through. My agent told me, he's like, "Yes, you got it." And I remember I just jumped up just like a football scream. I was like, "Yes." And I remember it's that kind of numb feeling. Like it's an awesome, incredible feeling. A lot of all athletes know what that feeling is. And then the reality of playing the role set in. I was like, man, I hope people like me. I hope they accept me as this character. I hope I can do it. I hope I have the chops, because I hadn't done enough acting at that point to feel like, oh yeah, I got this. I mean, if I got a role now in a series, I'd be as comfortable. None of that would exist. I would just be excited to go to work. This was a lot of trepidation. It was such a big thing. It was like, can I handle it? You know? And one of the first comments, because the internet was very early. There was believe it or not, there was a day we didn't have the internet back in the day, way before you were born. But they were just, it was in its infancy. So people were starting to say things. And I remember one of the first things that was said was like, we wanted Superman, not Sushi Man. Now for me, my skin is thick. You just can't, it doesn't hurt. My brother saw that and thought it was the funniest thing he had ever read. We still to this day laugh about it. He'll even, if he wants to goof around, he's like, okay, Sushi Man. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's one of those things. People are far too sensitive these days. As a football player, I got called every name in the book. I remember we were doing my senior year, we were playing Delaware State just in a scrimmage, a live scrimmage as things were going on. And I blasted some kid into their sideline and I blasted him into the sideline. We flew into the sideline and those guys knew they knew my name. They're like, you know, come on, Mr. Brooke Shield. They would grab me and say stuff like that as I was trying to get out of their sideline. But I was just like, yeah, you know who I am. You know who I am. Cause I was an All-American. Like, yeah, you know. And that's that banter that goes through in football. You have to be an animal and you have to have a tough skin and you have to be able to take all those slings and barbs and everything. And that's the same thing as a public figure, as an actor, as someone who's an activist or who will speak out the way I speak out politically these days. You know, I get attacked. I mean, I love it. I say something political. I'm like, you know, X, Y, Z. And they're like, yeah, and you're the worst Superman ever. Dime store Superman says blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, you know, if that's all you got, I've already won the argument. So sorry. But that's,
I know they're not any Superman. So
pardon me.
They're not even a Superman at all, this commenter on Twitter. So
like, you're the worst Superman. I'm like, thank you. Acknowledging that I played Superman. It's just the weird things people say, but it prepared me as an athlete and taking those slings there. My coach Verba used to yell at me every day my sophomore year, say all the worst things to me. That was his style back then. I don't know, probably still is.
Yeah.
Now we're like great, super great friends. But yeah. He also was really integral to me becoming an All-American, though, too. It worked for me. I wouldn't drop a pass in practice, an interception, anything, ever. And it translated into the games. I mean, I broke NCAA records. It was great. So having that thick skin, though, from playing football and being an athlete, you know, you're going to get knocked down. I don't care how tough you are. You're going to get knocked on your tail. It's going to hurt, and you're going to have to get back up. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. You're only as good as the next play as well. And that's the same thing as acting. You know, you're only good as good as the next thing you're going to do. Mm-hmm. They can't rest on your laurels. And I think it's a great sports is a great metaphor for life. The way life should be is a meritocracy. You earn it, you get it. None of this. I don't like participation trophies. I never have. You know, I there's things you should aspire to, and merit is one of those. You earn something, you deserve it, period.
Yeah. What's kind of your reaction to how things have changed so much? Because even when I was younger, it wasn't like, oh, everybody gets a participation trophy. It wasn't like, oh, there's no valedictorian because we're going to offend someone, or, oh, we're not going to say this, say that, and so on. So I think that especially in the last, maybe I would say 5 years, but especially 10 years, there's been this big shift where now it's like, oh, if we criticize or not if we criticize, if we praise someone, it's like this other person is now triggered. How do you kind of respond to that? Because we've seen this even with like big athletes and big, you know, NFL kind of things becoming more woke. So it's almost like even these people who are so hardcore, so intense, it's like it affects their lives also.
It turns my stomach, and not in a good way. It's awful. You know, this. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in the UK. And one of the things that a friend of mine said to me very clearly, she was a very decorated athlete. She said, one of the things that we love about America is that in America, if you're Michael Jordan, everybody celebrates that and celebrates his success and says, I want to be like Mike. That's literally the slogan. I want to be like Mike. I want to earn that. I want to be that good. And it takes that hard work and that dedication. And you celebrate him and go, yes, Elon Musk, I celebrate him. I aspire to be a billionaire. Good for him. You know, maybe I don't really, but that's a whole other ball of wax.
You're like, I don't know.
I don't need that much. But just because, you know, he's a super genius and he thinks in a different way. But you know, we applaud and aspire to be like people who are great, who change the world, who change the world of sports or change the world of commerce. Jeff Bezos, I went to college with Jeff Bezos. I'd like to go back in time and buddy up with him a little bit. You know, he was a couple years ahead of me, but I would like to be pals with him because, he's changed commerce now for the worse, for the better. You know, people can argue that. I think for the better, and I think there's some things that he does that I don't like, you know, politically, but that's fair. Like, part of the problem here we have is it's become so tribal and so polarized that people will just absolutely vilify the other side, and I don't do that. I'll talk to anybody. I'll listen to their opinion. I don't start calling them names. I'll tell them why I disagree with this, and this is what I believe, and I think we need more speech like that. But this whole thing about – you know, no more AP classes, no valedictorian, you know, no most valuable player. That's a fantasy world. That goes down to that, you know, that word equity. Equity is a bad word. It's a terrible equality of opportunity, not outcome. It's one of the tenets of what I say that I always say truth, justice, in the American way. And they're like, you know, well, Superman doesn't say that anymore. Although maybe he's going to again. There's just a story out that under the James Gunn version, hopefully he will get back to his Kansas values. I mean, because you hear you have this character who's the greatest American icon of all time, the most powerful being in the world, and is raised with small town American values. And because of that, decides to do everything for good. That's the, you know, and the American dream for me, the American way is individual liberty, individualism, you know, of not government first, not the collective. Individuality, that's first. Equality of opportunity, not outcome. The ability to compete fairly, not have government just go, okay, you know, these guys get to have everything and you get nothing. You have to run through all these regulations. No, compete fairly, which then you just work hard work, which brings you great wealth and self-reliance. And that's what everybody wants. That's why everybody wants to come to America. That's the dream. And they're trying to kill it. And I think they're trying to kill it for reasons that are, you know, about big government, which I am not a fan of big government. I'm a fan of small government. I'm a very Ronald Reagan. I go back and watch his speeches. And if I were to run for office, I would literally want to give half of my speeches that Ronald Reagan already gave. They're so good and they're so prescient and they make so much sense right now. It's unbelievable. And he has such a great sense of humor. Fortunately, I got to meet him. I have a picture right here. Man, you can't see it in the thing, but I love it. It was amazing to meet him.
Wow.
But it makes great sense for the world today. And, you know, people online, oh, you fascist. How can I possibly be a fascist if I think everybody should have an opinion and be able to voice it? I believe in the Second Amendment. No fascist believes in the Second Amendment. Are you out of your mind? That's the one of the first things they want to do is take that. I believe in small, limited government. What fascist wants that? It's crazy. So,
people throw what is kind of your reaction to seeing woke superhero films or like this movement from in Hollywood away from, let's say, Superman wanting to kind of protect American values? And now we're kind of seeing, like, I don't know if people view comic books or even just any kind of superhero in that kind of positive light. And I guess we saw like the Batgirl got canceled. I think it was maybe too woke. But where do you think that's going to go with movies kind of in that genre?
Down the toilet. It just doesn't work. Nobody wants to watch it. You know, there was a big controversy that, you know, Lois and Clark had a kid, Jonathan Kent, they named him, and they had a new thing that was out, and it was in 2022, was it? And they're like, you know, and he's gay, or he's whatever he was. He was non-binary. I don't know what he was, but he was dating a hacktivist, like Japanese dude, and there's like the first gay kiss and blah, blah. And like they were like, oh, it's a bold new direction. And I said, it's not bold in 2022 to have a gay superhero kid. I mean, like every other superhero is gay these days. And I made a joke about Robin always having been gay. I still think that's funny. it was a joke. But the thing is, that, you know, that comic got canceled. You look at, excuse me, you look at the like you were talking about, you know, Batgirl, that was canceled. So if people aren't going to watch it, then it's not going to do well. Because at the end of the day, this is show business. And they have to make – there's a bottom line. You need to make money. Things like ESG and diversity, inclusion, and whatever. I go backward. See, I say – what is it? Diversity, equity, inclusion. I say diversity, inclusion, equity. I just switch the letters because then it spells out die, because I think that's what it should do. It should die. That's stupid. It's stupid. It's the exact opposite of what Martin Luther King talked about. Everybody's talking about, you know, see color first, see this, you're a victim. It's classist. It's racist. It's all baloney. Work hard, do your job, you know, do and nobody cares what religion you are. Nobody cares what color you are. Nobody cares what sex you are, or if you're gay, if you're binary, non-binary, whatever it is. Nobody cares. Let's not identify ourselves with those things first. Let's talk about, you know, are you a good worker? Do you know what you're talking about? Are you a professional? That's the stuff. It's a meritocracy, and that's what America should be. I'm on my soapbox here today, but what the heck?
No. How has Hollywood and how have some of your friends responded to you kind of voicing more of your political views that might not align with those of Hollywood's?
Well, first thing I forgot to mention also was, like, look at Top Gun 2. That was pro-America, way to go, and it brought back the box office after COVID and everything like that. And they talk about James Gunn and the new Superman going to say truth, justice, and the American way and his Kansas roots. That stuff to me is the pendulum coming right back. And I hope it continues to do that. As far as my friends go and everything here, I mean, I don't think my core values or anything has changed ever since I was a kid. I mean, I've changed. I've grown as an individual and all that stuff. I think, you know, those tenets I talked about the American way, those are always have been ingrained in me just naturally. It's what I grew up believing and thinking. And part of that is kindness and helping others. And, you know, that's all a big part of it. So my friends, I don't think anybody's surprised. When I played Superman, some guys would make jokes like, of course you're playing Superman. That was very nice and it's fun. My brother thought it was the most hysterical thing. And when your own brother's like, of course you're playing Superman, that's a pretty good litmus test right there. But as far as being political, like Sean Penn, I can't stand Sean's politics, but I love Sean. Like if I saw Sean right now, I'm hugging him because we're family. We grew up together. You know, his brother Chris and I were a year apart. We're on lots of sports teams together. You know, I don't care if your politics don't align with mine. I'm not going to demonize you and I'm not going to hate you. When I see things like how to talk to your MAGA friends or MAGA family at Thanksgiving. I'm like, you people are out of your mind. You're trying to divide people, and it is divisive and it's awful. And I disagree with it wholeheartedly. Within my family, we've got all sorts of folks. And so we have the conversations and I love to engage. That's it. So what I usually get is I get people in Hollywood will have an opinion of me that I go, okay, here he is. He's going to be this super conservative. I don't walk in screaming Second Amendment, you know, when I walk in. I mean, that's not it. I do sit on the board of directors for the NRA. I am a sworn sheriff's deputy in Frederick County, Virginia. I am a reserve police officer in Pocatello, Idaho. It's not a joke. Everybody knows that. I do all kinds of things to support our men and women in uniform, military. They know where I stand on that. I'm very pro-America. Great. You can say whatever you want, though. You know, that's another thing. So they're like, oh, you dumb actors. I did go to that other Ivy League school. Not the one that starts with a D, the one with less snow and better weather, a better football team.
and a better basketball team. Well, Dean, you need to call your friends, call Jeff Bezos and say, hey, it's Dean, and I need you to change this wokeness. Let's take things this way. Maybe you can convince him through some friendly conversations.
I'd love to talk to Jeff. I mean, here's a guy who is, you know, I'm a capitalist. I'm all about capitalism. There is no form of economic form ever in the history of mankind that has lifted so many people out of poverty. And people think it's a zero sum game. Like if Jeff Bezos has, you know, whatever he has, 60, 100 billion, whatever it is. Oh, that means it took it from everybody else. No, that's created wealth. And he's made a system where everybody can get everything all the time. He deserves that. Now, you know, when he starts buying media companies and sorts, you know, that sort of thing. I'm like, you know, I don't like that as much because he's putting out, unfortunately, these days, you know, media companies put out a point of view. And I wish they really just did report the news. I'm somebody who is, I got Bill Clinton back over there. You know, I voted for Democrats before. I voted for Al Gore the first time he ran. Sorry. You know, I don't like what he's done with his climate change grift, and I call it a grift because it is. I'm not a fan of John Kerry being our climate czar, flying around in private planes and then saying everybody else has to cut back on water. I mean, there's so much, the hypocrisy is crazy in our current political climate. It's unfortunate, but I don't begrudge anybody their successes. I want them to be successful, and I strive and want to be as successful. My son's 22 years old. These are the things that I teach him. Celebrate someone's success. Emulate them. Work hard. Get there.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. Well, that's awesome. Dean, this has been such a great conversation. I have so many things I could ask you, but I really appreciate your time. So
We'll do it next time.
Yes.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
Dinesh and Debbie started taking Relief Factor 2 years ago. And the difference they have seen in their joints the past 2 years has been nothing short of amazing. Aches and pains gone thanks to this 100% drug-free solution called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The majority of the people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie has been able to do the exercises that for several years she wasn't able to do. It's been a game changer for her, her aunt, other members of her family, and for many other people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself by ordering the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call the new number 1-800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. Feel the difference. Well, that wraps up today's show. Make sure to follow me on social media if you liked today's episode. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, True Social, Twitter, all the places. I'm at Danielle D'Souza Gill, and that's where you can find my videos, thoughts, all those things. I host a show regularly on Epic Times called Counterculture, so I would love to see you guys over there as well. And I'll see you all tomorrow.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.